Welcome, everyone, to the opening of Saturday morning here. I'm completely turned around on days, everybody. It is still our 73rd annual convention. I think so far so good. It's been great. It really has been great. I'm so happy to see so many people here. I need to thank everybody that has been supporting us, whether it's Allison and Belle and all the other folks from ACB Media and on Zoom, our hosters, our streamers. Katie back there, who folks, Katie has been in the corner for 3 days, okay?
I thought I was coming to a round hotel. Why am I in a corner?
She is the only person that found the corner in the round hotel, ladies and gentlemen. I miss her. Normally, she's a lot closer to me, and we are on opposite sides. Ryan, who has been going to bed way past any of our bedtimes and getting up way before most of us.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
I'm sorry? Woo-woo, yes, woo-woo for sure. We have a very special flag presentation. The flag is in the room. It is on the left-hand side for you. No, if you guys are looking at me, it's on the right-hand side. And folks, we have a Boy Scout Troop 200 from St. Michael's Church, and we have William March and Brandon Thompson.
Braden
Thompson, I knew. I was so close, Sheila. I got everything else in there. And I just want you guys to know something. We have literally watched them grow up. How long have you been? How long? What was your first time with us? He was 12, and now he looks like he's 27, but he's actually 17, folks. So 5 years of coming, and they are going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, okay? So if you are able to stand and you would like to stand, please do so.
Hello.
Please place your right hand over your heart and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Young man, you
are tall. Yeah, listen, folks. I'm telling you, they really do look like they're 27. Y'all know I'm tall, and they're right up there. How tall are you? 6'2". 6'2". I still got half an inch to say that I'm older and taller than you, but I feel like next year I ain't going to mess with these boys, okay? Thank you guys so much for coming out. We appreciate it. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Have a good one. 5 years and we haven't scared them off yet, folks. And y'all know I'm not a morning person, so you, and they still keep coming back.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Yeah. Folks, at this time, we normally have a presented, is Sally here? No, she's in registration. Many of you, I've chosen to carry on a tradition that my predecessor, Ms. Sheila Young, has and found and keeps in the archives, both personal and FCB, of a good man in every aspect. He was a good friend to me as a young whippersnapper growing up in FCB. He was a wonderful member to FCB and ACB, and he was a great husband to our friend Sally Benjamin. So if we could have a moment of silence as we have listened to the Lord's Prayer sung by William Benjamin.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done on earth now as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses now as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not now into temptation, but deliver us from all evil, Lord. For thine is the kingdom, with the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth now as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not now into temptation, but deliver us from all evil, Lord. For thine is the kingdom, with the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. And lead us not now into temptation, but deliver us from all evil, Lord. For thine is the kingdom, with the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Always appropriate. A little forgiveness and a lot of protection, folks. Folks, you're never going to get tired of hearing us thank some of the folks that continue to be by FCB's side and support us, not just with great information, but with some very important dollars. And those are our sponsors. So I'm going to work my way over to Dan Spoon, and I hope I'm going up the right aisle. I am. I got him. I found him. I remembered where you were sitting.
Hey.
And I'm going to hand this over to Dan because he does a much better job of remembering everybody's name correctly, folks.
Here you go, buddy.
Thank you, Mikey. And first of all, just a little forgiveness this morning. It was a long day and a late night, and hopefully we'll do okay. But if we miss anybody, we truly, truly apologize and shout it out, and we'll make sure and consider you. But we actually raised over $10,000 in corporate and individual sponsorships this year. Absolutely amazing. So thank you, thank you, thank you to all of you who give your heart and your treasure to the Florida Council of Blind. Thank you so much. And I guess Leslie and I are going to kind of double team this. So we're going to start out.
We're
team tagging. Okay. All right. So to get started, at our platinum light level for $1,500, we have Charter Spectrum, Spectrum Charter, as you all know them. And then at the gold $1,000 level, we have ES&S Vote, and they're going to speak to us this morning. Lighthouse Central Florida and Vanda. And now I'm going to, Vanda Pharmaceutical, and Vicky's going to speak with us this morning. And I'm going to turn it over to Leslie to give us the silvers.
Good morning, everybody. So thank you. I can't say enough to everybody. Sorry for my voice. So the silvers is Democracy Live for 500. These are 500. Doug Hall. I don't know if anybody's, I'm just, okay. Friends of Library Access, Inc. LC Electric. And Vespero, and Vespero is going to speak to us on Zoom today, this morning. Okay, give me a minute. Here comes the bronze. The bronze is fun. I love the bronze. 250, because I get to talk to everybody. I know everybody so well, and it's fun. All right, here we go. Bronze. Disability Rights Florida. Disability Rights Florida. Greater Orlando. Oh, hang on. Florida Vision Technology. Greater Orlando Council of the Blind. The House of Lynn, which is Chantel. Hang on. Halifax. Halifax Council of the Blind. Pinellas Council of the Blind. And Tallahassee Council of the Blind. And I'm going to turn it back over to Dan. Bronze Light for 200. Sorry, it is Manatee County Council of the Blind. Yeah. So you can sponsor at any level. Don't forget that for next year.
Dan. All right. And now we have our gold sponsors at, excuse me, red sponsors. God, thank you, Leslie. Our red sponsors at $100. And we have Peggy Carpenter. Hey, Peggy. Rick and Alicia Edson. Osla Gonzer. Brenda, Amanda Lee. Get my right Lee's there. Dan Spoon, Walter Mayer, Mary Tyson, James White, Mikey Weissman, and Sheila Young. And now back to Leslie for the white sponsors.
I know. All right. Okay. All right, white. This is a $50 level. Hang on one second. Julian Clement, Paul Edwards, Jason Goldfield, Debbie Grubb, Bruce Hillebrand. I'm glad I don't have to do names. Bruce. Okay, so Bruce. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. Katie Lear. Cassandra Jesse, Mark Lear, Patricia Leposki, and Leslie Spoon. And back to Dan for blue.
Okay, here's the hard one. All right, the blue level at $25. First, we have one affiliate sponsor, which is Guide Dog Users of Florida. And then we have Annette Carter, who's our web host. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Deborah Davis, Margaret Germain, I'm saying that right. Now I'm blank. Okay. Joseph Graber, Cynthia Hawkins, Carissa Janice, Deborah Kendrick, Paul Lewis, Rachel Schroeder, and Gloria Simmons. Thank you all so much to all of our sponsors. And now I'm going to turn it back over to Leslie to introduce our sponsors who are going to speak this morning.
So Vicky, I think Vicky's here.
She's coming.
Okay, so Vicky Preddy from Vanda, she's our gold sponsor for $1,000, and she has been with us the whole 6 years that we've been doing the sponsor. So thank you so, so much, Vicky.
I'm right here on your left. There you go. Thank you.
And Pam Soge sent her check in, so we didn't have her on the list. So say, give a big round of applause for Pam, also as a gold sponsor. Thank you.
Good morning. Excuse me. I wasn't out late, but I feel really disoriented and tired. So I apologize. I won't take much time, but I'm Vicky. I'm a registered nurse educator from Vanda Pharmaceuticals. This is, like Leslie said, the sixth year that I've attended. So thank you all for... Thank you. We appreciate the invitation every year, and I love coming. It is a great crowd. That's what Mikey said, and we believe him. Right, last night he reminded us. And so I'm here representing non-24-hour sleep wake disorder, and it's a common disorder in people with living with total blindness, but it can occur in those with low vision as well. And what non-24 is sleep disorders that result from not having enough light perception to set your circadian clock every day. So people with this disorder end up having a lot of problems falling asleep. They kind of toss and turn at night, don't get a very restful night's sleep, and then maybe have a lot of sleepiness during the day where they're napping a lot. So if you are struggling with anything like that and you have vision loss, just or you know someone that's struggling and you want to learn a little bit more about it or talk to me personally, I have an exhibit booth, believe it or not, and I am straight through into the exhibit hall. Once you enter those doors, I'm straight ahead. And I will be here today. I'm going to take about an hour off because I have a Zoom call from 11:30 to 12:30. But I'll be here for the remainder of the day if you want to talk to me. So thank you again for inviting me. Have a great day.
And Vicky, just so you know, a little disorientation in the morning, not resting, you may want to talk to yourself. Make sure you're okay. Thank you for your continued years of being here and helping us. I appreciate it when my folks are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and getting enough rest. Leslie?
Thank you. All right, so we have some representatives from ES&S Vote. They've been with us for many, many years. We really appreciate their support. I apologize, there's four of them, and I did not remember all your names. So thank you for your continuous support. I don't know if they're here.
ES&S, you here?
Okay, so just if anybody sees them, they are in the exhibit hall, please tell them thank you. They've been a really, really wonderful support for us for many, many years. And vote, 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 Dan says. That's music to Debbie Grubb's ears. Yay. All right. And our other sponsor is Vespiro, and they're on Zoom, and I'm not sure. Amazing. Hi, Amazing.
Yes, hello.
Hi. Is Vespiro here, Ryan Jones, on Zoom?
Yes. Ryan is here.
Yay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you, Ryan, so much. Vespiro has been a wonderful supporter for FCB, and thank you, Ryan, so, so much. And take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Leslie. I always look forward to Leslie usually reaches out in October, November, so I've got it on my calendar. I always look to hear from her. So we appreciate and are really glad to be able to be a sponsor for Florida Council. As Vespiro is obviously a collection of a number of companies over the years, most notably Freedom Scientific, who still has an office in Florida, and a number of our team are in Florida. It's an honor to be able to be a sponsor. I actually grew up in Florida. I'm one of the three people who were ever born in the state of Florida, I'm pretty sure. And so I grew up in the northwest part. I lived down in Pinellas County for a number of years. So very strong connection to Florida. I live in Kentucky now and Lexington. So get on I-75 and go north and you'll find me. But we have obviously a really close connection with ACB. We've been at the national convention for the past few years, and several of us will be in St. Louis this year. So hope to see those of you who will be there as well. I want to give a quick shout out too to a special person who just retired as a tech support agent for us, worked on my team for a number of years. Mark Lear spent about 8 years with us as a part-time technical support agent and did a phenomenal job. And so thank you, Mark. Give your congratulations to Mark. He's going to work on his bowling game, and give your condolences to Katie because Mark has more free time to aggravate her probably. So
He has a honey-do list now.
oh, good. He's got a big list, I'm sure. Excellent. Just a couple of notes from Vespero. Obviously, you're still continuing to do updates for JAWS, ZoomText, and Fusion, but I want to make note of one thing that there was an update that came out this past week. And one of the many of you, I suspect, are probably using at home our home annual license. This is something that's available in the US where you can get JAWS for about $100, $105 a year, ZoomText for a little less, Fusion for a little more. For those who are part of that program, you now have access to a feature that was put into JAWS back in October, which is called Page Explorer. And it's some AI technology that allows you to get a quick orientation or overview of the layout of a web page. So if you're going to a new website and it's somewhat, you might not be familiar with how the site is laid out, what kind of information is on the page. The Page Explorer will give you an overview of that and help you understand, here's the sections of the page, here's the general content of the page, and you can even ask follow-up questions like, give me all the text from the article if it's a news article, or is there a phone number listed on the page, or whatever specific thing you're looking for on that page, you can ask follow-up questions. So originally that capability was not available in the home annual edition of JAWS and Fusion, but it is now as of the May update. So I would encourage you to update if you haven't done so already. A lot of other things coming. There's a lot of research going on in the AI world. I'll talk about that a lot more in my presentation in St. Louis, but there's a lot happening in the realm of screen reading, and how we can interact with the computer is changing. And so at Vespero, the team is doing a lot of research around this, and you'll see capabilities coming into JAWS, Fusion, and even ZoomText probably later, the second half of this year, around ways to be able to navigate more efficiently, but also to actually have the screen reader do things on your behalf when that makes sense as well. So we'll probably be able to demo that some this summer and let you even get your hands on it. So I just want to kind of reiterate, the world is changing really quickly. Even at Vespero, we've been through a lot of leadership changes in the past 9 months. And so a lot of things changing, but the core principles aren't changing. And the core principles and our core team is here to build software to allow those of us, including myself, who are blind or low vision, to be able to access digital technology around us. So that's not changing. The last thing I'll say is, I want to just make note that Thursday this week, May 21st, is Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And this is a kind of a movement that was started a number of years ago to help raise awareness globally around accessibility. And that's accessibility for any disability, not just blind and low vision. But obviously, we have a certain special interest in the blind and low vision sector. But if you're out and about, or if you're on social media, pay attention if you see the hashtag GAAD. If you hear JAWS say it, they'll say hashtag God because it pronounces it that way with the double A in it. But Global Accessibility Awareness Day this Thursday, it might be, it's not a bad idea to post things on social media. If you're on Facebook or other social media platforms, talk about how accessibility, when things are built accessibly, how has that impacted you? Because it helps spread the word to those who don't know about accessibility or are not familiar with it. So feel free to do that. It just helps helps us all if we lift up the world around us and help them become more aware of accessibility and the benefits that it brings. So thank you, Leslie. Thank you to the council, and we look forward to seeing some of you and working with you all later. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan, for your continued support. And folks, only at the Florida Council of Blind do you get that early peek behind the curtain. You know, we get it first here. Thank you for not forgetting us here in Florida, Ryan. We super appreciate your support and collaboration. I'm going to tweak my. Is Debbie Grubb in the room?
I am.
Oh, hi, honey. I've been looking for you. Okay, thank you. I know where you're at. Folks, I'm going to switch a little bit my agenda this morning, just to give some folks a few minutes to prepare. I'm going to introduce you guys to a young man, relatively new to FCB, to present the hard work that was done last night behind closed doors. This young man's name is Paul Edwards.
Thank you, Mikey. You're getting older all the time.
Never catch up to you.
I don't know. I'm starting to get younger. I'm playing with toys now.
Paul, this is a family friendly.
So, I want to begin by thanking my nominating committee, who made my job immensely easy. By how appropriately and effectively they worked, and they also prevented me from making a major error. So, nominating committee, you guys are the boss. My job this morning is to report the slate of officers that has come out of the nominating committee. So, for president, much against my better judgment, we recommend Mikey Wiseman. For first vice president, Cassandra Jesse. For second vice president, not remembering her first name, Shelly Sawyer. Shelly, I apologize. She's I see my youth is showing. For the office of secretary, we have none other than Liz Bowden. For the office, which I nearly forgot, of membership secretary, we have Miss Napier, Chantal Napier, and for the office of treasurer, we have none other than Miss Sheila Young, who is, of course, is our immediate past president. So that is the slate that the committee recommends and that we will be voting on tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Thank you, young Mr. Edwards. Folks, on my agenda, we have a report from our Constitution and Bylaws Committee, and presenting that report for Cynthia, it's going to be Cassandra Jesse.
We're done. No, I'm just kidding. Cynthia says that she apologizes for not being here. She's missing us like crazy. But basically, her report is that the first thing we did was we worked on the policy manual. That was her first thing we did. We tried to get everything updated, make sure that you guys have what you wanted, especially the committees, what your mission is and, you know, what you want that to pick. She asked that you continue to do that. It is on the website, the email address where you send it to. She didn't put that there, so I don't remember by heart, but send it to her and we'll look at it. The second thing we worked on was that we wanted to make sure that, and Paul, I'm sorry, I had a brain cramp there for a second. The last thing, we had voted, we had motion that we voted on, which we have killed, and that was, in other words, we took it away. And she didn't tell me to mention it, so since it's dead, it doesn't matter. And that is her report. So, I want you guys, I know you've been going into the restaurants and you've been hearing from Katie that your meals are $15. I need you guys to remember that they're adding in the gratuity, so the tips is in there. So just remember, when you see that it doesn't say $15 or $16, just know they added it. It doesn't mean that you can't give them something, because I'm going to tell you something. They've been working their behind off. And they've been whatever needed to be tweaked, they've tweaked it, twalked it, flopped it, and made it better. And so it doesn't mean you can't give them something. I'm just letting you know that when you see it, and it's a little bit more than $15, $16, $17, $19, whatever it is, just know that it's added in there. You guys, the bartender been on it like a hornet, making those good drinks. Don't forget Marcos, okay? Definitely been taking care of us. I don't know, you guys, this whole hotel's been doing it. I mean, when y'all say?
Here, here.
They've been tweaking it tweaking it on the fly. You know, you tell them it's done. Your room might doing something. Next thing you come back, it's fixed, you know. So they definitely want us here. And you guys show your love. Are you ready, Mikey? I guess I'm not. I guess he's not ready yet. Oh, he's ready now.
Yeah, thank you. Mark Reichert, are you on Zoom?
I am on Zoom, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Very good, sir. Very good. Good, yes.
Good to hear your voice. Folks, again, another one of the shoulders that I have been lucky enough to stand on, bounce ideas off her, get scolded by sometimes, and she keeps me in line. You all know her as Debbie. I like to refer to her as Her Majesty Lady Grubb. She is going to be introducing her lovely panel that they have put together, and this is going to be her show for the rest of the morning. Thank you, Debbie.
Not the whole morning, don't panic. Good morning, everybody. It has been Katie Lear, your wonderful convention committee chair, has asked me for the past several years to do opening session, maybe because everybody else is too sleepy. But anyway, I'm so thrilled to be here, and I'm going to introduce the panel, and then we're going to spend just a moment talking about what we want to do here. And it is my sincere hope that when we finish, that we will have some time for some questions. The voices that you will hear on this panel are familiar because they were all in the legislative seminar event that we had yesterday. The first person I'm going to introduce to you is with us by way of Zoom, and he is no stranger and gave a wonderful presentation yesterday, Mr. Mark Reichert. Say a word, Mark.
Word.
There you go. The next person on our panel is our officer person. I can't remember the real name. I said that yesterday, but then I thought it was wrong. Okay, so our officer liaison, the giver, along with her husband, of that beautiful flag pin that brought so much money and joy to our organization, Connie Sims. Say a word, Connie.
Word.
Oh, she just said. Okay. And then the person that is probably one of the best known persons in FCB history, still with us in the earth, is Mr. Paul Edwards, one of our past presidents. Say a word, Paul.
A word.
All right, everybody. One of the things that charmed me most about ACB first, and then FCB, is when I came into the organization, a lot of emphasis was placed on grassroots advocacy. And I do believe that we need to do other things to earn money, to get recognition. I'm not saying anything. This is about for something, not against anything. And I want you all to understand that. But I think without grassroots advocacy, because as people have quoted for years, everything once started locally. And before we begin our conversation, we're going to be talking about some of the history of grassroots advocacy, what it brought to us. We're going to be sharing some of our own stories. And then we're going to be discussing how people can have a meaningful grassroots advocacy presence without putting themselves or the organization that they represent in some kind of legal jeopardy. So, but I wanted that our panel asked me to start out by telling my personal story, because when I came into ACB first and I joined that way, I lived in the state of Maryland then, and I knew nothing about anything. But I really, this was just before IDEA had not become an idea yet. So we were still doing Braille bills, and we had been very unsuccessful, and I was tutoring a young boy who was quite brilliant, but he was reading like on a second grade reading level. And so I said to our group, we will have a Braille bill in session this year. So what I'm going to say is the first thing I did was the national office was phenomenal. I could call, ask Paul Schrader a question, ask anybody a question. Julie Carroll was there. She was quite wonderful at the time. So many wonderful people. And I don't know why, but I kind of realized I could also go to the California Council of the Blind. Do you know that anybody I called would talk to me? I was a person from a little tiny affiliate who didn't have a lot of lovely people, but we hadn't made a name for ourselves yet. And what I'm going to tell you is, because I was sincere and really wanted to know and really wanted to do something, people talked to me. They explained things to me. For example, California Council of Blind sent me sample resolutions. I didn't know about writing a resolution. They sent me some of theirs. They sent me their constitution and bylaws, because the little affiliate in Maryland we were working on needed a new constitution. And so then I joined this organization called the Advisory Council for People with Disabilities in the state of Maryland. And I met so many wonderful people. And what I found was that not only blind people, but there were people with mobility impairments quite severe. Their drugs were being stolen from them because they were in poverty level. They weren't receiving what they needed. They weren't being termed in their beds, so they were in nursing homes and hospitals if they were anywhere at all. And one of the members I talked with had her wedding dress stolen. So I met some wonderful members of an organization called the Department of Human Resources in that area that deals with disabilities. And so I began to talk to people and meet with people and learn from people. I knew what I didn't know, but I just got nervy and asked because I felt I could, and I felt if I learned enough, I could help do something. And the operative word is help do something, because the thing about grassroots advocacy and the things about doing anything is we all do our part, but we all work together. There are no stars. If you really want to do something and join a team and join an effort, there will always be something for you to do. And we all don't have the same gifts. So the point is, you need to share with us what you feel comfortable doing, what you like doing, and what you feel you could learn to do within your comfort zone. So within this organization for all people with disabilities, I met this wonderful old senator from Maryland in the state legislature. Her name was Senator Garrett. And for some reason, I don't know why, but she liked me. And we were going to the Maryland legislature to talk about what these people under a certain financial level needed to get what they needed, to be at home, to have a decent life. And I was going to represent our committee and testify. Now, I had never testified before anybody like that in my whole life, and I was terrified. But I thought, well, I've got to do it. So Senator Garrett was on the committee before whom we were going to go and testify. And I go up there with my guide dog, with my heart in my mouth, and this voice that I'd come to know so well said, I want you to listen to her because she knows what she's talking about. And I thought to myself, bless your heart, I hope they listen to me, but I'm not at all sure I know what I'm talking about. Then the other thing we began to do, which was almost unheard of, we had a consortium. We had a consortium of all people with disabilities. And we began to, there was an election going on in the state. So we said, we didn't know we couldn't do this. We said, why don't we begin the process of getting these people to put a plank in their platform regarding people with disabilities? And so we did. And they did. And they came in all their disability, everything, there was a plank in that platform. Now, that may not sound like much today, but back when this all was happening, it was quite significant. And I want to mention a couple of other people who were so wonderful to me in those days. Mr. Scott Marshall was working for AFB at the time, and he was a member of our Washington chapter. I was a member of the Baltimore area chapter. And when I would talk to him sometimes, then I'd say, can you help me figure out how to word this? What does this exactly mean? And he would talk to me all the time. And when we had these meetings with these politicians coming, he came over from Washington, D.C. He helped me. He was there to me. And I'll never forget it. The first few times I'd go, oh, God, do you think this is going to go? And he'd say, not to worry. Not to worry. And it was so comforting and so loving. And then, after everything was over at these meetings, we'd go to this wonderful seafood place downtown Baltimore, and we'd have dinner, and then Scott would go home. I can't tell you all the people that were so kind and so wonderful to me as I was learning, and they still are, but when you don't know anything, you got to be a little nervy and go and say, this is what I'd like to do, but I need guidance from you, I need advice from you, and I've got to say that no matter when I called the ACB National Office, somebody always had time to talk to me. They sent me stuff, they explained stuff, and do you know what happened? You won't believe this because I didn't believe it myself. My phone rang one day, and I picked it up, and this crusty voice said, hello, Debbie, I'm Durwood McDaniel. And I thought, Durwood McDaniel is calling me? And he talked to me for 45 minutes. I'm sure he had a gazillion things to do, but somehow he heard about me, about my desire to help us, and everybody was working with us. And in fact, I'll never forget it, when we were called in the roll call, and Leroy Sondard said, and in Maryland, we're going to have a Braille bill this year. I mean, it was just people so kind, because I wanted to do this. And human nature doesn't change. And so what I'm going to say is, if we could all try, all of us, to be a bit more positive and go to people with the idea that we need and want to learn from them. That doesn't mean that we have to be parrots and do everything that they say. But I can tell you from bitter experience and good experience, when you do it that way and you go to people and they know that you're going to do something with what they tell you, they're willing to invest their time and their expertise in you. And when I came to Florida, the first thing Gail Edwards Krause did, I just loved her. I wish all of you could have known her. Anyway, she put me on the convention committee to do program. I loved that. I said, Gail, but people don't know me. She said, I know you, and I want you on my committee. Just lovely things like that. And so I'm not going to talk much longer because I want this panel, but I wanted to open with these kinds of stories to say that you don't have to know it all. You don't have to be this great expert at the beginning. You have to be somebody with a heart who cares and a heart that wants to learn and do the right thing. And we got done what we did back in those days when we didn't have many people and I knew very little. I just thought, gee, there's not much. We might not always get what we want, but there's nothing to stop us from trying. And sometimes in today's world, with so much enmity, and you know, we've forgotten that even though We are upset with our political opponents at times, with reason, but it is a two-party system in this country, and we have to learn to work with people that we don't always agree. It doesn't mean that we have to change our party affiliate, that we have to vote for those people, and we're going to talk about that today in just a moment. But I just want to say that if we come with positivity, and we come and we show the passion that we have and why we want these things to happen, that not everybody, but it is amazing the people that will work with you, and the people that I have known both in Maryland and in Florida, and when I came, and then we started working on accessible voting issues not long after I was here, and I was invited to be on that group and got a real opportunity to meet and know Mr. Paul Edwards, who, you know, like I've said so many times, speaks off the cuff better than most people write. And so it's just been a wonderful experience, and I come with no I tell you what, there's still so much I don't know. It's not about pride. It's not about arrogance. It's not about, well, I'm better than anybody else. It's that I want to see stuff done, and I want to learn from those that I can learn from. I want to bring those along who want to work with me, and we want to be a part of a team. And our team will be better, and our team will be stronger if you are a part of it. So anyway, having said all of that, we are now going to spend a little bit of time talking about some meaningful initiatives that maybe all of us are familiar with, but what grassroots advocacy did in terms of making this, bringing it to the right place where it could become a policy, a law, et cetera, et cetera. So the first person we're going to speak with now is Mr. Edwards.
Well, I didn't know that. One of the things that people forget is that our situation as people who are blind remains the same. One of the realities of our lives is we are not going to suddenly be cured. We are not suddenly going to recover from blindness. It becomes a part of who we are and a part of what we represent. What that means in a very real sense is that every single one of us becomes an expert, because the truth is that all of us know better how to be blind than all of the experts in the legislature. The truth is, if we blindfolded them and told them to cross the street, they would be so paralyzed with fear that terrible things would happen to them and to those around them. So it seems to me that one of the things that we need to recognize is we are not at the heart of issues because of the fact that we're experts. We're at the heart of issues because we know more, because we live it every day. And when we forget that, one of the things that we do is we disable ourselves because we get afraid of all of those other people who are out there. I think that the other thing that Debbie didn't talk about is both she and I have taken the position that one of the things that we have a responsibility to do is to leave some tangible results behind. So Debbie and I worked together early in 2000 to produce the first voter rights handbook that actually went through all of the concerns surrounding these new voting machines that had just been developed. Debbie worked very hard with the Environmental Access Committee to be the primary person responsible for creating our Environmental Access Handbook, which is a tool that's been used all over the country
Debbie also worked to develop in the educational task force an extremely good guide to enable individuals to understand the process that was involved with IDEA. That is, what are the rights of parents? What are the rights of children? When you leave these tangible components that are out there and that people can get to and get at, you provide them with the tools that they need to be effective. I've tried to do the same. One of the things that I've been doing for the past several years now in the White Cane Bulletin is writing a thing that started as mumbles from Miami and turned into jottings from Jacksonville. But we're now up to 21 of those articles, and each of them has spoken to particular issues and has aimed to provide tools for the rest of the folks that enables those folks, I hope, to get a better sense of what an issue is, how to think about it, and some of the steps that we can take to try to make those things better. So at the heart of advocacy, there are two things, it seems to me. First, there's what Debbie talked about, which is feet on the floor, getting to legislators, breaking down the doors. Second, there is the creation of a set of tools that can enable grassroots advocacy because you've provided folks with the key ingredient that they need, which is the knowledge. You guys already have the expertise because you live it every day. And what we provide is helping you to understand how to get your feet on the floor and how to understand the particular issues that we write about. But the last thing I want to say at this point is that it is crucial, in my opinion, for all of us to practice what we preach. We are now living in a time where, whether we like it or not, most of the things that Debbie and I worked on are in jeopardy. Not because laws are likely to change, but because the attitudes that currently exist in our country devalue people with disabilities, marginalize our rights, and try to place us in a position where what we are supposed to be is what we were 30 or 40 years ago. That is good, submissive cases for charity. I won't be that. You won't be that. And the reality is, what we need to be more than anything else is ourselves. Thanks, Debbie.
Okay. Now let's remember these things that are said, and let's use them. You know, there's a thing, back in the day, before we had matches and stuff, people had a thing called a tinderbox. And in it was a little piece of flint, and they would keep that with them, and they could use it to light a fire. And if ever we begin to feel apathetic or that, well, there's nothing I can do, let's get out some of the things, not only that were said here in this meeting, but throughout this wonderful convention this weekend. Let's make a flint and keep it in our special little tinderbox and ignite a good fire that does good things. We're now going to hear from another grassroots advocate person you heard from yesterday. Connie Sims is going to say a few words to us now.
Thanks, Debbie. So, yeah, I want to just echo what Debbie and Paul have talked about for the grassroots. It's getting to know your constituents, your legislators, whoever it is for legislative. For any type of advocacy, you want to build that partnership. And like they said, and I've always said along, is you are the expert because you live it, like Paul said. And I kind of had that experience a couple weeks ago at a presentation I was doing, and they were trying to tell us about STAIRS. And I'll just kind of say they were trying to say that they knew what people with low vision or blindness could see. And my last statement was, you know, you guys are telling me how I see or how other people see, but I've never had 20/20 vision. And I said, so how can I tell you how you see when I never experienced it? So what makes you think you know what I can see or anyone else? And the room got quiet. I mean, absolutely quiet. And I just said, you know, you guys, it had to do with stairs. And I said, you guys have made it the built environment, you know, for you, for people who are fully sighted, fully capable of doing stuff. I said, we've had to adapt. So it really resonated with them. The room got quiet, but at least I kind of, I wouldn't say threw it back at them, but it made them think about it. And now they are really wanting to work together and pass some stuff. So it's kind of like telling your story, but you want to be nice. You don't want to be argumental, but you want to give them scenarios of how this could affect you. Because it's been great. I mean, it's good to have differences, but you always have that support with each other. I think about my mom when I was in school, high school, and they wanted to close our school for the blind in Aberdeen. And some of you guys might have heard of Bill Janklow. He was our governor twice and in the Congress. And this is when he was in first term. And my mom actually had wrote a letter, and I still have it to this day, to him about her concerns. And it wasn't mean, it wasn't nasty, but he actually wrote her back. I have that letter. But then he actually called her. And because of her letter and the way it was written, it was very good, and he never did close the school. The school is still going. But it took time, but, you know, just the advocacy is the plea, the understanding, showing the compassion, showing them, like, the tools to make things happen. You always want to try to have a way to present and have them say, well, this isn't going to work, but then have an idea of how you can make it work. Give them something to work with, because if they see something that you think you can fix and you give them the solution or a possible solution, they're more willing to listen to you. It's basically just starting, and you always learn. The more you advocate, the more you're going to learn. And you just always want to be yourself. You know the topic, like Paul said, just talk from your heart, because that's the best thing. Your best knowledge is how to advocate.
Thank you, dear. All right, we're going to end this segment, the segment of our program, by hearing from Mr. Reichert on Zoom, the attorney and advocate who's been done just about a little bit of everything and extremely well at that.
Wow, Debbie, Deborah, whatever you are going by these days. I just want to say, you talk about a tinderbox. I think you are your own little tinderbox there, honey bun, my dear friend. And thank God that FCB and ACB and our community has you in particular and people like you. But not everybody can be Debbie Grubb. And if you, dear listener, are feeling perhaps like, you know, gosh, I can't possibly do what any of these other folks are doing, I would say this to you. One of the few things that we haven't said yet today, and I'm going to endeavor to not repeat or just underscore stuff, but give you a few other practical things. The first thing is, especially for those of you who are reluctant to do any kind of a presentation to anybody, because, oh my gosh, I don't really know what I'm doing, and I'll feel like, you know, I can speak very well, or gosh, I don't really understand all these particulars, or I read all of this material that Paul and Debbie and Connie and maybe others have provided to me, and honestly, it just goes way over my head, and there's so many details in some of these things, I don't know if I can handle it. You know what? You can. because there are three powerful words that you can say to anyone that are any person who's in a position of influence, or certainly a policymaker or their staff or whoever. And those three words are, I don't know. And when you say that to them, you are not conveying that you're unprepared. I mean, if you are genuinely unprepared, or you didn't bother to read anything, or didn't ask questions, I would encourage you to do it. But the three most powerful words I've ever seen used in meetings with policymakers or their staff are, I don't know. And as soon as you say that to them, what you can say to them thereafter is, but I'll find out and I'll get back to you. Because when you say, I don't know, you are showing your vulnerability. You are proving to them that you are not some slick dude from Northern Virginia who has spent 30 years being paid to do public policy work, hopefully somewhat successfully. You are showing that you are, in fact, who exactly you are, a real world person who isn't some operative type or someone who is parroting what someone else has put in your mouth, regardless of whether you believe it or not. And yes, we do have people in the blindness system who do that quite a bit, frankly. Embrace your lack of knowledge if, in fact, you don't have it or feel like you don't. Do not worry about feeling like you are not going to have a polished presence or all of the answers that are needed when you go into a meeting or to advocate for anything. Because your embodiment of, or your willingness to show the vulnerability when a question or a topic is posed to you and you're not sure, don't fake it. You can say, I don't know. And I'll find out and I'll get back to you. The great thing about I'll find out and get back to you is you get to be in touch with them again. See, even your lack of knowledge, or if you have a little bit of self, whatever, you're unsure of yourself, whatever, embrace it. That is your power, because you can say, I'm here, sir, madam, whatever, to advocate for a particular position. I know it's true because I have my own personal story, and you can tell your personal story. And then if they say, well, gosh, it seems like here in these materials, you're proposing that there be this bill that will do X, Y, and Z. How much do you think that's really going to cost? It says here, and it's going to cost X. What exactly are all those funds going to be used for? You might know some answers to that. Hopefully you will. But you don't need to know all of them. And you can say, you know, I'm honestly not sure about precisely how they came up with that. We didn't talk about this. Honestly, I'm here because I know this is a problem for me. But I tell you what, I don't know, but I'll get back to you. I will call you tomorrow or next week, or I will write back to you, right? And this will lead to my second of hopefully 3 points. The second is, the first time that you talk to somebody who is in any kind of position of influence or policy or whatever, the first time that you meet with them should not be the time that you're asking them for $5 million for a program. Or as soon as you go in to see them, I mean, of course you're going to have a request. They know that people are going there not just to have coffee with them. They understand that you're there to ask for stuff. But the real key is to develop a relationship with that person of influence and to become the kind of expert such that a policy staff person will do the same kind of thing that Durwood McDaniel did with Debbie, right? Where you're the person who, you may not know it all, you might not even know that much, but what you've demonstrated is that you're willing to show up and speak for yourself and on behalf of your people. And over time, you become a trusted resource for that policymaker or their staff or whomever. And when an issue about blindness comes up, or they're not sure what it's about, or some competing group comes in to ask for something, they are going to pick up the phone or drop an email to you and say, hey, this thing crossed my desk. You know, as I clearly, I don't know as much about blindness as you do. Can you help me out here? I'll never forget the story. The time this was, I don't know, working for my first paid job. So 1994, 95. And we were talking about, I don't know, whatever, all kind of different issues, Social Security, some other topics. And I was young, even more arrogant than I am now, a person going up to Capitol Hill all the time and meeting with different offices. And a few of these offices, because of the issues we were covering, I was meeting with them quite a bit. And one young woman who was a staffer for a congressman from Illinois, I'd met with her, I don't know, bunches of times over the course of that next year. And then out of the clear blue, and this is, it had never happened to me. It was the first time it ever happened. And it was such a lesson. All of a sudden, it wasn't me calling her one day. She was calling me out of the clear blue to say, hey, Mark, my boss is going to be, meaning the congressman, my boss is going to be doing a keynote presentation for a blindness group. And we really want to know exactly what we can say. What would be some things you think we could recommend, that I could recommend to my boss as we develop the speech? And I said, oh, sure, I'd be happy to help. You know who the keynote address was for? The National Conference of the National Federation of the Blind. And so here I am, however old I was, 25, and I'm putting words in the mouth of a U.S. congressman who's going to speak for the other blindness consumer organization to do a keynote presentation. So that's only one illustration to say, I mean, you know, 25 years old, you think you know everything, you know nothing. And yet, because I had developed a certain amount of trust with this staff person, they are reaching out to me for help. And you know what's great about that? Now she owes me something. I mean, not a lot, but we have a relationship. So that's the key thing that needs to happen there. So that leads into the third Debbie and final point here, which for me, which is we love anyone who will be willing to participate in the policy process, for sure, no matter how much time you have to offer. And look, I mean, I get it. As I'm getting older, I'm starting to deal with concerns about, you know, an elderly parent. Others of you have other stuff going on in your lives. You've got things to do, kiddos to take care of, whatever it is. So no one's going to sit here and judge you if you don't have a ton of time to do stuff. I think everybody has a little bit of time to do a little bit of something. But don't feel like we're guilting you into that. But here's the thing. Individuals might not have a whole lot of individual time to give, but organizations, particularly organizations that want to change the world, have to have a permanent and ongoing commitment to advocacy work, and particularly in the policy process, because there ain't nothing that happens in a short period of time. And the fight is never over. I mean, even when you have a spectacular victory, as we did in 2010, when we got the Communications and Video Accessibility Act into law. So great, you go to the White House signing ceremony, you shake Mr. Obama's hand, you all go out for one heck of a splashy dinner afterwards at the Old Ebbitt Grill with all of the advocates, and you're really feeling like you've just, man, you own the world at that point. No, because it's implementation thereafter. The FCC starts to fiddle around with the rules, and you got to fight for that. And then once the rules are established, now are they being enforced properly? No, not necessarily. So now you have to work with the companies again. And gee, maybe there's an opportunity to do more things. And you know what? There's a successor piece of legislation to the CVAA that we're all advocating for within ACB now. And likely that'll be on a similar trajectory. So it's never over. Even when you win spectacularly, and in order to affect any kind of change, it is a commitment and it is a relationship to people. So organizationally, it's really all about that maintenance of effort. And I've been now preaching now for far too long to this choir because honestly, I think among the chapters that I know better than others, I mean, for sure, FCD is right up there. And I know you've got some pretty powerful advocates down there. So I'm not suggesting that, you know, this is all brand new territory for you all by any means. But I think everybody needs a pep talk, and especially for people who may be thinking, good grief, ain't nothing happening in Washington. You know what? There's a ton happening in Washington that is not being covered on the whatever. I guess we don't say the 6 o'clock news anymore. That's not that Joe Rogan or Rachel Maddow aren't talking about. Okay. So there's a ton of stuff, including stuff that slowly but surely moves forward that no one hears about because, of course, it's not the kind of controversy that some of these vultures like to sink their talons into. Right. It's because it's not sexy stuff. It's not going to get them votes, or at least not very many out there. They're not going to get media attention for it. Those issues aren't covered. But you can be assured that while sure these days things are super slow, the wheels are still turning. And now for sure, as Edward said, you know, now's not the time to be checking out. Now is the time to keep whatever powder you have left dry, but also keep marching forward, because the fight always goes on and those relationships need to be maintained and expanded. With that, Debbie, back to
don't,
you.
Don't mute, because I want you to talk just one or two more minutes about something.
Okay.
Mark has worked diligently to create and to advocate for the Cogswell-Macy Act. And I want to tell you, it's been a hard thing. Because the legislation is right, it's fair, it will do great things for a multitude of people with sensory disabilities. And it doesn't seem to get anywhere. And I want Mark not to end on a negative note, because he's going to say some just a couple other things to us in just a minute or two. But you just got to realize you cannot lose heart. Because, and so, Mark, could you just say just a couple things about that?
Sure. So the principal reason why this thing we've talked about forever and always called the Cogswell-Macy bill, so Alex Cogswell, first deaf girl to be educated formally in the U.S., and Annie Sullivan, who you should know. It's all about special education and reforming parts of IDEA, our federal special education law. The principal reason why it's not going anywhere, I would argue 90% of the reason why it's not going anywhere, is because the U.S. Congress has not touched IDEA since the year 2004. So I can't do that high level math. What is that? 22 years. Unbelievable. And why don't they touch it? Because some of our best friends in the cross disability community, I think very rightly, I'm not criticizing them for this, are petrified and have been petrified for years that amending our federal special education law might, frankly, allow some people who don't like parts of it to gut it, to eviscerate parts of the protections that are there. And so you say, well, right. So now you have a situation where there has not been any real major federal policy improvements in our special education system for nearly a quarter century. And how do you move that? I mean, at some point, you would have to say, okay, we're not going to stand with the rest of our cross disability community friends, and we will just plunge ahead. And yeah, we're going to get some arrows thrown at us or knives thrown at us from them by them, because they're not happy. But you know what? You got to be careful, because if you start to push it on our own without the support of other groups, they are absolutely right that there will be attempts to try to fiddle with the greater law than in ways that we don't want. So that's just one of these examples where it shows you the dynamics that happen when you're trying to, let's say, build a coalition of different organizations that even if everyone is in agreement that an idea is the right thing to pursue, there are going to be different pressure points, different values that different groups will have. And you really have to navigate them. But I will say, Debbie, to end on a hopefully positive note, I mean, even though we've been talking about this Cogswell-Macy craziness for way too long, since what, 2011, 2012, when we first started talking about this. Okay, it hasn't become the law of the land. And yet, university programs are teaching their teachers, as they're you know, the new, the students are going to become the new teachers, the new CBIs. They're using that draft bill as essentially the gold standard for what the policy should be and what, how people should be responding to it at the direct level. Other organizations have used it to model efforts that they are doing. I'm thinking particularly of our friends in the deaf-blindness community, who, you know, they got their own twist on things, and God love them, or what's the Southern expression, bless their little hearts. They're amazing. They can be a pain sometimes, I'll be frank with you, to work with, because of course they want attention for their own people, and I can sympathize. But I would just say, even when you have a situation where you've been working your fingers off on an issue for a long, long time, and you don't actually get over the finish line ever, just know. I mean, it's not a matter of belief. It's not a fantasy. It's just, it happens. Your work, it reverberates through eternity in a way that you might never see. Even when something like this Causal Macy thing is not moving, great things have come from it, subtle though they may be, and maybe not getting a lot of limelight, but it definitely sort of redefines and slowly, like an aircraft carrier turning, you know, shifts the direction of our community. So even in a failure or in stalling, you can see progress that's made.
Thank you, Mark. I now want to turn to we've hopefully gotten you excited about grassroots advocacy, knowing that if you want to and choose to, you can play your own role in the team effort. There is some concern about litigious people. And what I know is, when you call the Department of Justice or when you call an ADA hotline, they have language that they say. So I want to talk to these people briefly to give us some cogent advice so that we can do what we need to do, educate, help, prepare, move policymakers to off the dime, that we still can do that and still protect ourselves, because, you know, we're not. And so I think that is a concern in our parent organization. And I don't say that it is a bad thing to be concerned about. But what I think is, we need to figure out a way, and hopefully with a new attorney on board, they will give us some help in this arena, that we don't stop our passion, we don't stop our advocacy, we don't stop getting people in every chapter that we have in this nation, both geographic and special interest, but we give them the tool that they need, the tools that they need to do this. So given the fact that we're hoping, and I'm certainly going to introduce myself to this new attorney and try to get him to do it, because I'm a member and I can do that, and so can you, in a nice, respectful way. But what I would say is, I want these experts to at least give us some introductory information on this compelling question, so that we don't have to be afraid. We can be passionate, we can do our research, we can say what we say. But when we help people, when we give people information that they can use to help themselves, how can we do that while protecting the integrity, our own personal integrity in terms of finances or whatever, and that of the organizations that we represent? And I'm going to have Mr. Edwards say his piece, and then Connie and Mark, and then we'll see where we are with time. But I think this is so important, because this is the elephant in the room right now, and it can be addressed respectfully, kindly, and toward the end of killing it, the elephant, and saying, you can do this, and here's what we need to do. So let's have these people at least give us some introductory things to think about, and let's see where we go with it. So, Mr. Edwards?
It's always so fun to start these things off. I think it's really important to recognize that
Well, people at the national level can say there are issues, legal issues surrounding advocacy. The American Council of the Blind is a confederation. It isn't an autocracy. That is, it isn't an organization that is operated from the top down. It's an organization that, when it started for two reasons. One, it started to protect the rights of grassroots advocacy, because it was the view of the people who started the American Council of the Blind that too much centralized control and too much power resting in the hands of a few individuals at the center is not the way to run a blindness organization. That instead, we need to take empowerment to the local level, apply it at the state level, and then, only then, apply that power at the center. So the whole tradition of the American Council of the Blind, it seems to me, is grassroots. So what that says is to me is three things. First, whatever the opinions of folks at the national level are, we at the state level, we at the local level may and will and must advocate, even if we are only advocating on our own behalf. Why is it important for us to advocate? Because the climate that we're operating in is one where if we don't advocate and if we don't go out there and make it clear that we exist, the reality is we will be forgotten. And frankly, that is what, in a very real sense, has been happening over the past few years. It is the large disability organizations with lots of money who are at the forefront of lobbying at the state level and who are at the forefront of lobbying at the national level. Unless we, as people who are blind, create an environment where we, as volunteers, because we can't afford to pay lobbyists, we as volunteers are going out and saying, blind people are important. We have needs. We have wants. We need to have laws passed that will enable us to survive. And we need laws enforced that exist, because we have as much right to be successful as everybody else does. If we don't do those things, we will simply be forgotten. And all of the things that we fought to create will gradually disappear as they are buried under the indifference that operates now, in particular, at the federal, state, and local level for all issues disability and all issues minority. The reality is that we are an endangered species that will end up getting nothing unless we advocate. So, regardless of what anybody says, we must advocate. I believe the simplest way to create an environment where advocacy can happen without fear of legal litigation is to simply put a statement at the top of any piece of advocacy we publish, or to say at the beginning, we don't purport to be legal experts. What we purport to be is people who care and give a damn. And we are not making a legal statement. We are instead simply out there to be sure you understand that what you do has impacts on us. And we expect you guys to respond to those impacts. If we do that, we're in effect saying to all of the people who might want to sue us, we don't claim to be experts. We simply claim to be people who are living the lives of blindness and visual impairment that you guys need to understand, because we need your help.
Thank you, Paul. And I just want to say, in all fairness to ACB, they have raised this issue because it's a concern. But I think as members and advocates, it is our right and our necessity to explain and make it clear to them how we feel about this and to say, it is your job not to staunch advocacy. It is your job to help us figure this thing out, because the best thing in my mind about ACB and all of its chapters is the heart and the vision that it brings to grassroots advocacy. We're going to have Mr. Riker, the attorney, now speak to us about this issue and so that we can come with some knowledge. We don't have to, we're not going to go away. We're not going to be diffused. We're going to say ACB has brought forth a problem, but we demand, we need a solution, and they need to help us find it. And that, so we're not saying that they're wrong. We're saying that there will be wrong if we stop grassroots advocacy or staunch it in any way, because other people, other organizations do it. So having said that, because I've had some go-rounds with ACB on this issue, and so but I highly respect the organization, but this cannot be allowed to happen. We cannot lose the foundational cornerstone of who we are. So Mr. Reichert, would you like to make a couple statements about this?
Oh, no, I have no opinions on any of this whatsoever, because I don't have opinions on much of anything. So, okay, fine. So, calm down, Mark. Be professional. Remember to be a professional blind person. So, in 30-some years of being intimately involved with just about every kind of national effort on, you know, the our various organizations have worked on, I can honestly tell you that every time when someone, us or other organizations that we work with, when somebody says, oh, we shouldn't really do that because honestly, there are restrictions on what we should do or why we can, you know, how we're doing it. In every situation when someone was trying to staunch or whatever, pull the plug or put the brakes on, put a barrier to someone's involvement, it isn't because they were particularly concerned about the fact that you would be putting yourself at risk for doing it. It's because they didn't want the thing that you wanted to advocate for. I don't know of any situation in which somebody who says, oh, we should step back from that because that's a real concern. I don't know anybody who does that for some principled reason. I've never seen it. You know what it's like in my mind? It's like listening to a lot of Southern former states of the Confederacy who argue that we need to protect states' rights when they frankly don't give a damn about states' rights as some legal principle. They want to discriminate. You see this all over the place. It happens in blindness. It happens outside of blindness. It happens in our country widely. And why do people take such positions? Well, because, of course, to be able to say that, oh, gosh, if we engage in this kind of activity, it's going to be a problem. That's a more reasonable sounding, plausible argument to make, as opposed to saying, over my dead body, are we going to take your point of view? So concretizing this a little bit, if you say, okay, well, gee, we want to engage in a particular type of activity, maybe we should ask a lawyer for their advice. Here's the thing. This is so critical. And most people clients generally don't understand this. You never surrender your agency to a lawyer. Okay. You don't go to the lawyer to have them tell you what to do. You go to a lawyer to ask for their counsel. It's why they're called counsel. They're not your leader. They're your counsel. And when you invite their counsel, you invite it from a certain point of view. For example, if we want to engage in some kind of political protest, you don't go to a lawyer and say, give me all the reasons why we shouldn't do it. And you don't go to the lawyer and say, gosh, we're unsure about this, so give us all the pros and the cons. If you want to do a protest, you go to the lawyer and you say, we are intending to do a protest at this date and this time for this purpose. Prepare for us exactly all of the things that we need to make sure we need to be to do in order to protect us as we move forward with that idea. You'd never go to a lawyer to ask to affirm or put in a roadblock into what you want to do. You go to them to ask for their advice on how you can do what you want to do legally. Now, it's conceivable that they would come back to you and say, I'm sorry, what you're proposing to do is categorically illegal. Here are the things that you need to that justify my response to you. And a decent lawyer will do that. Most will. But that's how you handle that. And then the final thing I'll say for now is, you know, on the individual level, people will often say to me, I can't tell you how many times I've heard this. Gosh, you know, I work, yeah, I'm a public employee or whatever. I work for a private agency, private service provider agency. And I just feel really uncomfortable doing any kind of advocacy work because, you know, I work for these people and they pretty much told me, you know, keep my mouth shut. So, especially for public employees, it can get tricky, but the general rule there is if you're working or a public employee, the higher up you go, the less discretion you have to be able to speak up. And that's, of course, because if, especially if you're at the highest levels of something, let's say you're a senior manager at the Department of Blindness Services or whatever, the higher up you go, of course, the closer you are in the proverbial org chart to political appointees or even to, let's say, the state governor. So naturally, people are going to assume that, wow, a higher up in the process, if they're espousing a point of view, maybe that's the administration's point of view. So naturally, that gets a little complicated. But most people are not in that situation. And we have plenty of case law that talks about the fact that especially rank and file staff, when they've made it clear in written and oral communication that the position they're advocating at any given time is their own point of view, we have something called a First Amendment in this country. Maybe some people don't believe that we still do. And it's taken a few hits over time. But you are most definitely empowered to do it. For a private employer, it gets a little trickier because, of course, in this country, we almost worship CEO leadership types. We think once you're a CEO, you're kind of enthroned and you can people are you know, working for you at will and you can do anything you want to with them. And most of the time, frankly, that kind of ends up being the case. But at some point, and this is my punchline, Debbie, which is, frankly, and Paul, you sort of touched on it in a way, but I'm going to drive the nail further into that piece of wood. The simple truth is, at some point, somebody needs to take a stand and be willing to risk. And you might say, Mark, that's a lovely pie in the sky point of view. Maybe you have that willingness to be throw yourself on a grenade. I don't. I can't risk my job, or I can't do this or that because, frankly, I have other things in my life that I really need to focus on. I can't risk it. You know what I'd say to you with that? God bless you. And therefore, you are not being called to be that person to take the risk. But we do need more people who are willing to take the risk. And I will close, Debbie, with this one example. There's a colleague that we all have. Her name is Priscilla Rogers. Paul, I know you know her. Pris Rogers is just a living saint, as far as I'm concerned. Pris Rogers, at one point, led the Department for the Blind, whatever they called it, in the state of Kentucky. The governor in the state of Kentucky basically said, we're going to consolidate blindness services in Kentucky, and essentially told Pris, even though she was the one running it, you know, hey, you're getting on board with this. We're moving forward. We're not going to have categorical blindness services in Kentucky. Pris Rogers saw that, was not about to toe the line, and resigned. We need more Pris Rogerses in this field who are willing to do the kind of sacrificial effort sometimes that's needed. And again, dear listener, if that's not you, I'm not putting guilt on you. You will know, some of you will know if you have that capacity or in a position to do it. I have been in that position and I know what choice I made. And it does come at some significant personal risk. But sometimes, particularly in a movement where we're talking about real people's lives here, right? This isn't just stuff you play with at a conference. I mean, it's very real world stuff. And if there aren't real world risks taken where there might be real world, sometimes painful consequences, there will not be real world change. Amen.
Thank you, Mark. I'm going to, I hope that you all have enjoyed this, and I think the content has been so important. I'm sorry we really won't have time for questions, but these people will be around, so find them. What I want to say is that when you do this special advocacy where you deal with a person with an issue one-on-one, sometimes they just want somebody to talk to that understands, that has experienced. And I will tell you, I have begged, I have cried, I have, because we have torn the heart out in ACB, out of our program for special education for blind children. And what I'm going to say in a positive way, I see messages from ACB that they want to see how we feel and how we want this organization to be. And for that, I heartily commend them. And so what we need to do is look into that. How does that work? How do I get my opinion across? Do I attend a community call? Do I write an email? What do I do to make my issues known? And so I think it behooves all of us to say that although we are not happy with ACB's view on grassroots advocacy, that they have, enough of us have said some stuff, and it's not just about that. They want to know what we want this organization to be like. So let's look into that after this convention. Let's all give our viewpoint because we are paid members. We can do this. So I thought what I would do is let Connie just say a bit about that little initiative and how it works and what we do and how we get our opinions out there as chapters or as individual members, because that is our right. Here you go.
Thanks, Debbie. Yeah, so I'm always believing that the members are first. I've always said I'm a board member, but I was a member first, so I've always be a member first. And all of you guys are so important, and that's what I advocate for all of you guys. And so when Debbie was just talking now, I can't even think of the webs or the email, but we have an email to have members, and I don't think we hardly ever get emails, but I love to see it get bombarded. I'm putting myself out on a limb here, but it comes to the board and the president of all the concerns and issues that you guys are seeing or hearing, and we want to hear that. I think the board is, you know, when we always call and we always ask, you know, is there any new emails, you know, because it goes to a couple of different people, but we really truly do want to know. That's one of my missions, is that it's important. And I know we talked about the scorecard, if some of you guys were around yesterday with the pre-convention. I wasn't a big fan of it, and I'm not, you know, not everyone's sold on it, but I think doing this, and you guys can actually, you know, get back. This is one of the other things, is you can really come back to ACB, and this is
what you can say is, I want the grassroots. We want to be able to do more and say more, because it's hard. But I know, I understand kind of where ACB is coming from, but I always kind of disagree with them sometimes, not always, but I believe that we all should be able to go out and say, you know, we're ACB. You know, we are a member of ACB. Not that you always represent them, but you're a member and we are supported by them. But even like it's FCB or your chapter, you want to promote them. And that's what I really believe is important, is that promoting them. And I've been doing a lot of presentations lately, even outside of the blindness community. But we are really starting to get outside people interested. And I have, one example that I have some people that hopefully really want to start promoting ACB. They had the resources and stuff. And it would be like material stuff. It's not necessarily money, but it would be getting our name out there. But again, it's that partnership and showing that we can, as just a member, and getting that grassroots advocacy out there is the big thing. Because it wasn't anyone higher up that made this connection. It was just me. And it wouldn't be because I'm a board member, it was because I was a member of ACB. So I think it's really important. If you guys have issues, make sure you speak up and say something. Always reach out to me. I'm your board liaison, and I'm always here to talk to any of you guys or help you with anything and give you ideas.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our program for this morning. I thank you for your attention, your enthusiasm, and my instructions to you is keep your tinder boxes full of flint, keep them in your pocket, safe, and get them out when you need them. And the final thing I want to say is that we are all members of ACB. It was our choice. We are not opposed to all of ACB. This was never meant to be an ACB bashing. And I hope that we all came across that way because it was our intent. But we are members and we have the right to ask for something that we want. So anyway, it's all good. God bless you all. Thanks for having us in today. And let's be a team and work together and go to the wall when we have to. But let's keep being tinderboxes. Bye, everybody.